Hello, and welcome to the Institute of Leadership and Management Weekly News Roundup podcast, where we take a critical look at some of the topical developments from the past few days with a leadership and management theme. I'm Caroline Haujigo, Communications and PR Manager at the Institute, and in this podcast we'll be looking at news up to the 28th of January 2020. Joining me to analyse these stories is Kate Cooper, Head of Research, Policy and Standards at the Institute. Hi, Kate.
Hello, Caroline.
Our first story comes from a BBC News interview with Universal Music Chairman and CEO David Joseph, in which he discusses a new book released by the label entitled Creative Differences, a Handbook for Embracing Neurodiversity in the Creative Industries, which sets out everything the organisation has learned about the creative potential of neurodiverse staff. Universal Music, which has neurodiverse singer-songwriters on its books, is now engaged in an internal awareness campaign designed to shift the emphasis of discourse away from what neurodiverse individuals are unable to do and towards celebrating their strengths and capabilities. But Kate, despite there being a recognition that world-changing ideas come from people who think differently, according to autism.org, just 16% of autistics are in full-time paid work. What can leaders do to right this discrimination around neurodiversity?
Well, I'm not surprised to hear that statistic, because our recent research that we'll be publishing shortly illustrates the essential exclusion of so many people, autistic people in particular, their exclusion from the workplace. And initiatives that highlight the capabilities that they can bring. We had one recently where a company were recruiting autistic people, particularly for IT projects. And this one, they're saying, oh, let's have them because of the creative potential. I think in a way it's a shame to label and stereotype people as having a specific set of capabilities, because what we should be looking at here is what everybody brings to work, their experience, their difference, as well as their similarities, and ensure that our recruitment policies are that aware of how to be inclusive, and that the culture of the organisation is an inclusive one. So it's to be welcomed, it raises the issue on the agenda, but let us not create a new category within an already marginalised category.
Our next story comes from the World Economic Forum in Davos, where BBC News spoke to racing driver turned entrepreneur Nico Rosberg. Since retiring from Formula One, Rosberg has become an entrepreneur backing numerous ventures, and explains that his rigorous approach to time management is key to helping him stay on top of his multiple projects. He says, such discipline when it comes to time management has a direct impact also on life balance and therefore happiness, especially if you use that to compress the working hours and keep more hours for time with family and friends. However, in a separate piece for BBC Worklife, Aeon Magazine's Dr. Christian Jarrett writes that there are other tools for solving the time management riddle, quoting researchers from Carleton University in Canada and the University of Sheffield in the UK, who have proposed that procrastination is an issue with managing our emotions, not our time. Kate, can leaders create effective time management cultures at their organisations that answer both the efficiency-based and emotions-related parts of the equation?
I think there's something quite amusing when someone like Nico Rosberg says how great he is at time management, when you think of the number of people who supported him and enabled him to make those very slight time gains. If we over-engage with managing our time effectively, we start categorising things as important as not important, work, progressing tasks, or not doing that. And we will often find that it's the social aspects of work that somehow aren't part of the task, might be seen by some as wasting time. And as our research published only last week tells us, people really value their colleagues, and you can't get to know your colleagues, you can't enjoy their company if you're very busy managing things to the nth degree. The procrastination, I think, is a very interesting one, because that's like the antithesis of time management, and yet it's ubiquitous. We all understand why we procrastinate, and different people have put forward different explanations for this. But the one that makes most sense to me is it's not necessarily we're procrastinating, we're just not terribly interested in what we're doing. It's not grabbing our attention, so we're putting it off because we don't really want to do it. And that is nothing to do with time management, that's to do with the satisfaction we gain from the jobs that we do.
Our third story comes from an interview on the BBC's Today programme with Chartered Management Institute head Anne Frank, in which she argued that sports banter can exclude women and lead to laddish behaviour such as chat about sexual conquests. She emphasised she didn't think sports banter should be banned, just moderated, and that good managers should be inclusive and ensure that everyone in their team feels comfortable. However, in a Guardian newspaper poll in response to the interview, one reader, a primary school teacher, claimed that sports is not a gender-specific topic. He said, "I've just taught my class of 8-year-olds all about how gender doesn't play a role in what you can achieve. We talked about elite female athletes like Serena Williams. So, Kate, should sports banter be relegated from the workplace, or does this send the wrong message about and to women?"
Our research in 2018 revealed very clearly that people don't want banter banned from the workplace. Sport is a topic of conversation that draws quite a lot of people in. There's a mistake in assuming that it's men are interested in sport and women are not, when of course that's not the case. But whether it's sport or cookery or foreign travel, whatever captures the imagination of a group of people in an office and seem to talk about it ad nauseam, there will be some people who are bored stiff with that conversation. And they're left out, they're excluded. And that's what we should be looking for, because if everybody in the office really likes sport and wants to contribute to that conversation, it's a great conversation. But if one or more people are not liking it, let's change the conversation. Let's talk about something else. Because the idea of banter, informal conversation, is to enable us to enjoy those important social aspects of work.
Our final story looks ahead to National Sickie Day, which falls on Monday the 3rd of February. This is the day when employees are most likely to call in sick, costing employers in the UK a predicted £34 million. Savoy Stewart, the London commercial property firm, found that employees within retail are the most likely to do so, with 76% admitting to lying. The most common reason employees felt the need to lie was actually due to needing a mental health day. One of the participants surveyed explained that the reason they lied was because they didn't feel mental illness would be accepted as a legitimate reason for her absence. New research by Deloitte and the mental health charity Mind suggests that young people in the UK are more likely to use their holidays instead of taking days off work when experiencing poor mental health. Kate, what does this say about how leaders are treating their employees if they either don't want to be at work or are too frightened to disclose that they aren't well enough to be at work due to their mental health?
There are two issues here, as you've highlighted. There's the not coming into work because you don't want to, for whatever reason. And we've talked previously about employers who give people what they were calling hangover days. But that idea of a discretionary day off that you can take whenever you need it. And that is a great initiative and a real benefit to people. The issue of not being able to talk about your own mental health problems or issues is a different one, and of one, of course, that we've been aware of for so long and have campaigned for a parity between mental health and physical issues, that people are allowed, encouraged, enabled to talk about them, to admit them. I was speaking at a mental health conference last week in Manchester, and the speaker that preceded me highlighted how at any one time 22% of people in work will have a mental health issue. But phone calls to EAP lines, which nearly all employers have in place as offering that first place, go-to place when you have a mental health problem, only 4 to 6% of those calls are about mental health issues. If people are taking holiday instead of sick absence, it suggests that the culture of the organisation, not only are you not allowed to talk about it, it's shameful. You have to hide it. And that's what we need to be challenging. Hopefully, It is rising on corporate agendas. There are so many resources out there, so many organisations that are talking about this, investigating this, offering help and support. But we're not doing enough, that's obvious.
Thanks very much, Kate. That's it for today. I've enjoyed standing in for our usual host, Rod Jones, and I hope you've enjoyed Kate's insights into today's stories. If you have, do check out our news and views pages on our website at www.institutelm.com, where you'll find even more topical content. Thanks for listening.